last year, year and a half. It's a very interesting time, challenging. We had to go through a major trial with the society. And so there are many things to be learned from that time. I may say so, and that's very interesting. From my position, I have to experience more or less every year, sometimes every 2 years, one place in the society is subject to the attacks of the devil. I use these precise words. It's not just a metaphor, it's a reality. You know, the Holy Scripture says that the devil is turning around, is circulating, looking to divorce someone. And indeed, the good Lord allows that our work will be tested by the devil. It's not just a normal or a usual trial. Problems, we have everywhere problems, that's normal, that's life. Whenever you have people, well, you will have some problems, it's normal. But when it is a normal problem, we have a proportion between the cause and the effect and the reaction. So you have a problem, and then you have the people who react to this problem, and there is a kind of proportion. I may say, this is what I would call a normal problem. When suddenly there is a total discrepancy between the real thing and the reaction, you see that the passions, that it's an explosion, it's like a volcano that goes in the air, then you know that this disproportion is caused by the devil. That's his way of acting. And so, as I say, it's almost every year we have to experience one place in the society who has to go under a major trial, but just one place, one totally localized. Sometimes it is a seminary. Sometimes it is just one place. And the difference with what happened this time is that this kind of trial was extended to almost the whole society. And that's very, very rare. In all our history, we had two or three of those. So very few. But once again, you see the same elements. That is, there is a problem, a real problem. And then the reaction is totally out of control. No comparison. And you see it's the passion, so it's blind. It's violent. It starts to go in all fuses in all directions. It's no longer the virtues who govern, but really the passion and sins and many kinds of trouble and a lot of confusion. I may say the element of that time was confusion. And it's interesting to reflect on this. Why was there confusion? The problem with this confusion is that some people have then lost the trust in the authority. I may say that's a major problem. Because when you lose the trust to the authority, then you are left to yourself. Then you are alone to judge, and you can no longer rely on anybody. That's the great, great problem of distrust. And that's what happened. Not everybody, of course, but certain parts of the society went into that kind. situation. And once again, if you go back and look at the real reality, there is no ground. There's no ground. So many, many things that were spread around in the internet during that time were just simply false. False, or even worse, the contrary of what really happened. If I look and try to see where does or did this confusion come from, we have several elements which did not help. The first, I may say probably the most deeper and the cause of all the others, is that we are experiencing since years a contradiction in Rome. I will try to develop that point because I think it's a major one. Since 2009, I am facing directly contradiction, that is, instances, authorities in Rome contradict themselves about us. The thing was so strong that in June I requested a meeting with the Secretary of State, with Cardinal Bertone, because of that. Well, he did not give it, but he asked me to see Cardinal Levada, and I told him, I want to see you because you people, you are contradicting yourself about us. Some of you are saying we are excommunicated, we are out of the church. Others say, no, there is no problem, we are totally in order. It's a whole mixture there. And we don't no longer know how to react with you, what to do with you, because of this. I will just give you some, well, two examples. One, it was in 2009. It was just before Easter. In the beginning of March, or even beginning of February already, the Secretary of State issued a statement saying the society does not exist. And if the society wants to be recognized by the church, it's necessary that they accept totally everything, the council and all the teaching of all the popes since John the 23rd. Until the present. So, no recognition of the society until they accept everything, all the novelties. 2 weeks before Easter, we have a ceremony of ordination. It's called Sitsientes. And this year, Rome did not want us to have them. They first started with Germany. In fact, it was the bishops in Germany who made the pressure. And so 1 week before the ordination, Cardinal Castellon is asking me not to have them. First in Germany, he said it in a very kind way. He said, you would do a favor to the Pope if you do not do them, because there is pressure from the German bishops and so on. It was about Germany, not about the other places. So I talked with all the four bishops. And we agreed to make a sign, to make a gesture, but not to compromise. And so we said, okay, we're not going to have this ordination in Germany. But the subdeacons who should be ordained that day, they will be ordained. They will be ordained in Icon. And so 2 days before the ordination in Icon, Karl Kassian calls me again. He said, you cannot have this ordination, it's impossible, you are against the Pope, and so on. And he said, here is what you have to do. You ask the Pope for the permission, and I guarantee you, almost immediately, you will receive the permission, and up to the time of Easter, that is in these 2 weeks, the society will be recognized. And I told him, how so? There is this declaration from Rome which says we cannot be recognized until we recognize we accept the council, and you know very well what you think about the council. It's not going to happen. He answered, well, this text is only a political text. It is only an administrative And by the way, that's not what the Pope thinks. So what shall I do now? I have an official day statement which says nothing with the society. I have a card who says, well, that's not what the Pope thinks. You see, it's an example of this contradiction. Another one, 2010. We are in the discussions with Rome, and they treat us, I may say, as Catholics. Bishop de Galarreta and the priest, they say the Mass in St. Peter in the morning. They celebrate the Mass in St. Peter, no problem. In September, a priest is joining us from the Novus Ordo. And he was a religious, and his superior sent a letter to this priest with a letter from the congregation, the religious in Rome, who said the following: this father is excommunicated. He's excommunicated because he lost the faith by joining the schism of Archbishop Lefebvre. So I went down to Rome and said to Monsignor Pozzo, what's that? He told me, oh, we have already spoken with this, we have told to the congregation of the religion, they don't have the right to say so, it's wrong, they are not competent, so they have to revise the judgment. And he made the sign in front of me, that's what you have to do with this letter. But you have to read the basket. So you have one instance in Rome who tells me to treat an official document from Rome this way. That's what I call a sort of contradiction. I happen to know simply that on the certain points where the Pope has done something favorable to us, you have other people in Rome who are doing sabotage against the Pope. Again, I'll give you an example, just that you may know that I don't speak in the air, but I have really these experiences. There is an abbey in Germany, it's the only Trappist abbey, and the Father Abbot asked the Pope not only to go back to the old Mass, because now it's allowed, can do that, but to go back to the old rule before the council. And the Pope granted it. He even said that he hoped that that's an example that would be followed by many. Now, 6 months later, this abbot has not received any answer from Rome. And he's calling a friend in Rome. He says, what's happening with me? And his friend, who is very, very close to the Pope, told him, well, write again to the Pope. But this time you send to me the letter, and I will bring it to the Holy Father, which happened. I know the story from that very person, so it's not just hearsay. Directly, this person, who is very close to the Pope, told me that story. He went to see the Pope with his letter, and he asked the Pope, what's going on with this abbey in Germany? And the Pope said, but it's 6 months that I have granted the permission. So what? They made an inquiry. And in fact, it was the person in the Secretary of State who should have transmitted the decision of the Pope who had just put it into the drawer. This man now is cardinal, the one who sabotaged the Pope. I know the same person who did even another sabotage, well, that is many. He just hijacked a decision of the Pope which had to be transmitted to the prefect of the liturgy. So the Pope, you see, you have to understand how Rome works. When the Pope decides something, it does not go directly to the persons, it goes through the Secretary of State. So if you receive a letter from the Pope, it will have gone through the Secretary of State. If you write a letter to the Pope, it goes through the Secretary of State. There are some must be well placed to get them. So in itself, it's impossible to get straight to the Pope. And even for the decision of the Pope, inside the Vatican, they go through the Secretary of State. And so you have people in Secretary of State who just block the decision of the Pope and don't transmit them. I have, once again, several examples of that. So it's something I know. They're facts. This I tell you so that you may have a background of what is going to happen. So I know that the Pope would like to do something with us. I know that he's very attached to the Council. Very. With the audience in 2005, it was the point which was impressed me the most, that was how inconceivable it was for the Pope to have a Catholic who would reject the Council. It was so strong that in the little letter which I wrote to thank him for the audience, I had to mention that I disagreed with him about the Council, to make sure he had a point saying, no, we don't accept that. Okay. So, we have discussions. During 2 years, we have doctrinal discussions in Rome. These discussions, they were interesting, very frustrating, at least for us, for our people, because we really had the impression that they did not listen to what we said. They had just to defend the house, and that's it. And the end of the discussions were pretty hot, because they told us, you are Protestants. And we answered them, you are modernists. That's the way the discussions finished. In, as a matter of joke, I said, well, we came to one point of agreement with Rome, and that is that there is no point where we agree. Just to say. And so they know that. And Cardinal Levada is inviting me. It is in June. He's inviting me for a meeting in September, 14th of September. And he says, to evaluate, for an evaluation of the discussions. And he adds, and also to evoke some perspective for the future. But clearly, the main topic will be the discussions, an evaluation on the discussion. So we arrived there. About the discussions, they said, well, maybe it took 3 minutes, maybe five, but it was very, very short. What did they say about the discussions? They said, the discussions, they have reached the aim. The purpose was fulfilled, which was for you to expose clearly your position. That's it. Is it good? Is it bad? Nothing. Just you were able to explain, to expose how you think. That's all. And then proposal. Rome is going to give you canonical status, and you sign this declaration. The name was Preamble. And what is in this preamble? More or less, every point which we would disagree, we had to accept. There was something in our direction, or maybe two things. One was to say, there is a legitimate discussion on certain points which make difficulty on the Council. So there was an opening on discussing difficult points. And another one which would say, and I say that's the most tricky one. The most tricky. And really tricky. Because it says, on the point we which make difficult in the council, we follow the following principle. These difficult or confusing points must be understood, interpreted in coherence with all the teaching of the church throughout the ages. So you must understand them as the church has always taught. And we reject any kind of explanation which is opposed to what the church has always taught. You know, that's what we have always said. That's what Archbishop Lefebvre said always. We say what is clearly traditional in the council, well, we accept. We have no way to reject that. What is doubtful, we understand it the way the church has always taught it, and what is opposed, we reject. So when you read that, you say, but that's what we said. Well, there was a little phrase that was added to it. And this phrase said, as we find it, so we have to interpret, to understand the things as the church has always done and so on, as it is done in the new catechism of the church. Now there is a little problem there, because the new catechism, is precisely accepting all the novelties of the council, and that's what we oppose. So in other words, they pretend now to do things as we do, and they do the contrary. Big problem. And so from the start, this text we could not accept. And that's what I told Rome. Can't accept. I told it even two times. The first time I tried to remain broad, because my aim was to demolish the frame which they were trying to impose to us. This frame is called the hermeneutic of the continuity. That means that we have to interpret or to understand, or they pretend that the council is in the line of tradition. And that's the only way you have to understand the council in the light, not only in the light, but to say that the council is traditional. And we say, no, that's not true. We say that we should understand anything that comes from Rome in the light of tradition. It's the only Catholic way. But precisely with this council, we can't do that, because the texts are opposed to tradition. They're contrary. What they say in the council has been condemned before, especially religious liberty, but also ecumenism, for example, very clearly the contrary. And so I say, no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. But I didn't want to go into the details. I just wanted to explode the frame. Because I said, if I go into details, they will change the details, but they will try to keep the frame. So I said, no, it doesn't work. They were not happy with it. And they called me and they asked if I could not be more precise. I said, okay, we'll do that. And so I sent a second answer. It was not that I would correct the first. No, it was exactly the same answer, but more precise according to their text. So I sent to Rome a double no. Things seem clear. Well, the problem, the big problem I was facing at that time is the following. Even before the 14th of September, I got messages from people who are working in Rome and which are friendly with us. People who have even been burned, the fingers have been burned, because they work too close to us. And they work in Rome. And they are our friends. And these people the same way he did with the excommunication. That is, without anything from your side. Bob does it. Done. And I got several of these messages from several different persons whom, let's say, authenticity I cannot put in doubt. For example, one of those was the person working in Ecclesia Dei, those who are dealing with us. And this very person, after we got the text, told us that's not what the Pope wants. So you see, I got all these kind of messages which were not fitting together. I got an official thing where I clearly have to say no. And I got other messages which are not official, of course, but we say, no, that's not what the Pope wants. The Pope is much more inclined towards you. And the people who tell you these things, they're not just someone in the Vatican. They are very close to the Pope. Very close. I mean, people who see him every day or every 2 days. And there are very few people who see him every day. And these people, they know the Pope, they know what he thinks, and they give me this message. So what am I going to do now? I have an official message where I have to say no. I have people tell me, but that's not what the Pope wants. You see, that was a major problem. So this is confusing, but the second problem I was in, it was impossible for me to say these things in the public. Because if I would say that, I would make things even worse. And Rome would say, that's not true. And even now, I expect Rome to say that, because I tell these things now. And if you think, what is Bishop Flick telling us? I would remind you of something which happened to me just a few years ago. It was with Cardinal Castrillon. Cardinal Castrillon told me the following. What I am going to tell you now, if you repeat it, I will be forced to deny it. Understand? I tell you something, if you repeat it, I will say, no, that's not true. And he continued by saying, the Pope and myself, we are in your favor. If he tells us that he's going to say the contrary, what can I do with it? Nothing. And just to remind you, that's exactly what happened with Archbishop Lefebvre during his audience with the Pope Paul VI. Paul VI said to Archbishop Lefebvre, you oblige your seminarians to make an oath against me. And when Archbishop Lefebvre said that in the public, Rome made a statement saying, that's not true. The Pope never said that to Archbishop Lefebvre. You see how complicated it is. So it's messy, and you can't even say it. And if you try to say it, you make it even more messy. So that was, let's say, a part of the problem. Add to this, as people did not know what is happening, they tried to invent. And with the internet, wow, here these things will go everywhere. And the most wrong, right, false, true, everything mixed. Impossible to make it, to correct it. And that was circulating in every places. People will say, Bishop Blair told us this, Bishop Blair did that and that, which were not true. Once again, I give you an example just that you may, as you say, touch a little bit of these things. It was said on the internet, Bishop Fellet told to the priest of the society in Austria that in the agreement with Rome, said to them this. I tried to explain in our discussion with Rome. Rome told us we will recognize all the places, everything, every place where you say the Mass, we will recognize it as a Catholic chapel. And I told them, oh, fine, that's great, but I think we have one or two problems. For example, we have places, we rent a motel room to say the Mass once every 2 weeks. You're not going to recognize and to declare now this room of the motel a Catholic chapel. So what are you going to do with this? And so they reflect and say, okay, we could use the Lunga Nata. It's a technical term. It means we would say every place where the Mass has been celebrated since 3 years, this place has a right to have a solid chapel. So even from the time being it's not, you have the right to establish a chapel there. So that's what I told the priest. And you see what came out in the internet is exactly the contrary. It's crazy. Madness. So that's an example of this, let's say, problem I was facing. Now, to show that it was really serious. The messages I got, they were very serious, very precise. And well, I did not give you names, but I give you one position. It is the secretary of the Pope himself. Closer to the Pope you cannot have. Who gave us these kind of messages. Example, Bishop Follet must not fear. Once the agreement is done, he will be able to continue to attack everything as it does now. Attack all the errors inside, outside, doesn't matter. Another one. If the congregation of the faith is ruling against the society, the Pope is above the congregation of the faith and he will overrule it in favor of the society. Or other things like the Pope gave me a message. You must know that to solve the problem of the society is at the heart of the preoccupation of my pontificate. So something very, very important for the Pope to solve the problem. To solve the problem means to recognize the society as Catholic. And I know that the Pope knows that we oppose the Council. So how do we reconcile all these pieces? Well, the situation came to a peak a little bit later in March. In March, I will receive the answer from the Congregation of the Faith to my double no. I said no to them. And so I am called again to Rome by the Cardinal Ibarra. On the 16th of March, he gives me a letter. And he said, this letter has been approved by the Pope. Now I tell you, this letter, if I would have only this letter, would mean the end of our relation with Rome. Because this letter says, you do not have the right to oppose what the Church has taught yesterday with what she's teaching today. You cannot say that there are errors in the Council. And more, if you refuse the proposal of the 14th of September, which has been explicitly approved by the Pope, this means that in the facts, you reject the authority of the Pope. And hence, there is a reference to the canon law, which, let's say, the words you don't find in the letter, but says, yes. And this reference says, you are schismatic and you are excommunicated. And then it continues by saying that the Pope, in his goodness, he wants to leave you one more month to think about it. And if during this month you change your position, please let us know. That's the letter. Clear letter. I want you to say thankful to the good Lord, because now I had something clear in my hands. This clarity did not last long. The day before, at the same day, I got that message from Rome. Well, you're going to receive a very hard letter, but be cool. No panic. And 2 days after, the message was, the only thing you have to do with this letter is to put it into the archives. In other words, don't give to it any credit, any attention. Imagine. When I got that message, I said, that's crazy. And someone did report that to Rome, and the person who got that message in Rome, with a little smile, said, yes, that's crazy. It's so solemn, you know, from Rome, this authority who says, I speak in the name of the Holy Father. If you disobey, it's finished, done, too. At the same time, well, don't give any attention to that letter. It's unbelievable. How do you want me to tell these things outside? I say it now, but at the moment when it happened, they could not. Clear that it was impossible. So what did I do? It's something you, in such a case, shouldn't be able to do. I shortcutted the congregation of the faith. If this message, which I got, telling me don't give attention to that letter, was not true, what I was doing here would mean it's the end. It's boom, the big explosion. Because if someone is a boss, is mandating someone to deal with you in a difficult question, and you disagree, and you try to bypass him, and you go straight to the boss is going to say, get lost. You're going to say, you have to go through the man I've given you. If you don't do that, you demolish his authority. And so I shortcutted the congregation of faith, and I wrote a new letter, something new, to the Pope. What I tried to do was something very delicate. I saw in the discussion of the 16th of March that, in fact, if Rome was so hard against us, it was because they thought that we really reject absolutely everything since 62. Everything means the Pope, the Council, whatever they teach, they do, they decide, we reject everything. That was my understanding. They believe that from us. That's not true. When we say that we accept the Pope as Pope and we pray for him, that's something real. It's not just a nice word in the air. And so I tried to write a letter in which, first, announcing the principles of the faith and the magisterium, I tried to show them that in fact, even in the council, there are some things which we accept. It is a very delicate, because there are things we accept, something we reject. And so to make this balance was very delicate. Anyway, after 2 weeks, I got the message from the Pope, now send this same letter to the Congregation of the Faith, which means that he would have accepted it. And that's why at that moment, said, well, there will be an agreement now. It's about to be an agreement, and so on and so on. Which has never been true. Why? Because, first, this text, which seemed to be more or less accepted, finally will not be accepted. That's the first point. And secondly, much more important, I have always, from the start, said to Rome, we are glad to be recognized by the church, but there is one condition. And this condition is that we are accepted as we are. And to be accepted as we are means that we continue to do what we do, that we continue to learn or to teach what we do, that we continue to attack what is wrong, the errors, that we continue to have our liturgy the old way. And I said, that's a condition, what I just quoted Archbishop Lefebvre, in fact, because he's the one who said that, and I just gave the quote, condition sine qua non of recognition by Rome. And so, at that moment, when I hear the Pope seems to be satisfied with my letter, I wanted absolutely to verify the second point, which was for me more important: are we or not allowed to continue to attack? And I made an extra trip to Rome to verify that. It was in May. And during this meeting, I saw that the Congregation of the Faith, in fact, they wanted to correct my text. And so I sent a letter to the Pope and to Cardinal Levada saying, you change one word, finished. Now we have the meeting of the cardinals who study my text. Cardinal Levada, at the beginning and at the end of the meeting, will say, we don't touch the text. You have the cardinals who express themselves. You have a vote. The vote is one abstention and all the others in favor of the text. And nevertheless, when I get the text in my hands, it is changed. And all the things I've kept out because I cannot accept them, they put in. What happened is simple. As I was not happy with the answers they gave us when I said, can we continue to attack? I made a test. I published an interview in Dici. It was the beginning of June. And there I speak about the errors of Vatican II. And I speak about, let's say, how bad the new mass is. And they used that. They went to see the Pope with this interview. And with this, they made the changes in the text. I know that precisely for two reasons. And the second reason is that when I was called to Rome on the 13th of June, they had my interview in their hands. And they said, you cannot say that there are errors in the council. You cannot say that the new mass is bad. And I also know that Lombardi brought the text to the Pope. And that they had the whole Friday afternoon from the Congregation of the Faith with the Pope. And they discussed that. So that's why when on the 13th of June I receive this corrected text, I don't need 1 minute of reflection. And on the spot I say, I'm not signing that. A few hours before, because I get that letter, the meeting is at 5 in the afternoon. A few hours before, the head of the Freemasonry in Rome says, cannot say more. I just say what I know. I know also that the state has prepared the counteraction, which would be a breach of relations with the Vatican, if the Vatican would have recognized us. And it's a big state. Several bishops' conferences had prepared also counterattacks. Precisely, the German speaking, they had prepared something which, in which it was clearly declared that they don't want to have anything to do with us. And if possible, they request that we leave the country, that we close all our chapels, churches there, and remove all the priests. That was the plan from the German-speaking countries. Against the recognition by the Pope, you have to understand, if the Pope would have recognized, that was what they have done. Plus, it was open in the text, open opposition against the Pope. It would have been a messy, very interesting situation. But just to say, these are the facts. So it's clear that many people thought, well, it's not far from an agreement. But in reality, it has never been so far. Because once again, the text is one thing. This condition sine qua non is another one. And the third is the canonical situation. Because once again, for us, we cannot be in any kind of situation. We cannot be in the hands of the bishops. It's impossible. We see with the Society of St. Peter, Christ the King, and so what happens to them. And I say that's one of the major problems for them. All their apostolate is depending on the bishops. And with this, the bishops, they can request from them what they want. And we know there are good people amongst these priests, but they are blocked. They cannot open the mouth. If they do so, it's finished. They have to go. That's why it's one of our first major requirements that we will have our own jurisdiction on the faithful. And amazingly, this point has been granted. Which means that our apostolate would be independent from the bishops. That's why, in the conditions which we have posed during the chapter, you find this point in the less important. It's one of the major, but as we already got it, we not emphasize it, because we already have it, you see. Does not mean that it is less important. No, it's very important. Major. If we don't have it, no way to go in. What else? I may say, here you already have the major points, the major line of what happened. It's not everything. There's something more confusing, which is, and what that's a point which was for me from the start, what does really the Pope want? If he said that he wants to recognize us, he cannot at the same time request from us the impossible. And we definitely are opposed to these errors which we find in the Council. And we're not going to say it's okay. No. I concluded, and also, let's say, with all these people who were talking to me, that most probably the Pope was ready to downgrade at least a little bit the Council. To say, yes, it is true, the Council is not infallible, so you may discuss about these difficult points, as it seems that they said. And so when I got this letter, this new proposal from the 30th of June, I wrote a new letter to the Pope where I said that. I said, knowing, you know, that we oppose the Council, and nevertheless that you to recognize us. I had to conclude that you were ready to put aside the problem. And I gave a historical example because it would not be the first time that would have happened in the church. I gave the example of what happened in the decree of union with the Greek in the Council of Florence. In the Council of Florence, that is the Middle Ages, where the late Middle Ages would say Renaissance, you had documents where the church did really manage to reunite the Greek, the Orthodox, and the Armenians. They did. You have the decree, they are signed. What happened then is when the people came back to the east, to Constantinople, to Russia, they were kicked out. They say the people refused what these patriarchs had signed. But they did. And there is one point which is very interesting. With the Greek Orthodox, there was one point where they were not able to come in agreement. And it was about the marriage. The Orthodox say that if the part is unfaithful in the marriage, this marriage can be annulled, can be broken. The Catholic Church said, no, you can't do that. But they were not able to find an agreement. So what did they do? They made an agreement dropping the case. They did not talk about the problem. If you read the decree on the Greek and the decree on the Armenians, you will see the difference, because with the Armenians, they mentioned the problem. But with the Greek, they just dropped it. And so I mentioned the case, and maybe that's what you do. You just leave the problem on the side in order to go ahead. Say, well, maybe that's what you want. And then I continue, but now, as you put these things again, I have to conclude that I was mistaken. And so I write him, please tell us what you really think, what you want. I also request an audience, but of course, this was not granted. But I got a letter, an answer to that. It's the first time that the Pope does answer me, anyway. And in this letter, which is dated from the 30th of June, you have these following points. First, he says, I did agree that we change the text. Then he said, there are 3 points which you must accept so that you will be recognized. The first is that it is the magisterium which is the judge of what is traditional or not. And, well, that's true. That's point of faith. So, but if we say yes, they will use it against us, of course. So it's dangerous. Second point, you must accept that the council is integrant part of tradition. That the Council of Vatican II is traditional. Imagine, during 40 years, themselves have said the contrary. Now they say it's traditional. And we say, beg your pardon. We say, look at the reality. And the third point, you must accept that the new Mass is valid and licit. But that point, I told them, well, we rarely use the word licit. We just simply say about the new Mass that it is evil. And that's the situation. Let's say with this clarification, things are clear. But everything is blocked. You see, I still now wonder what we can do to continue doctrinal discussions. Can we? Is it any way possible? I still don't know. Well, I have some ideas, but everything is blocked. And you come now to a curious situation which can be a little bit confusing, which can explain also what happened recently. who still would like to solve the problem. He can have many reasons, some good, some less good. Some good is like, for example, repair. He did say to one of his close people, you know, the society has suffered so many injustices. So they know that they have been unjust with us. So to repair, that's fair. He wants to avoid a schism. He said it publicly. Not that we pretend, or that we don't. We always claim that we are in the church. We don't want to make a schism. But they may have this fear that we would finally end up in a schism. That's possible on their side. Also, ecumenism is a possibility. It is trying to make easier the way for the Orthodox, because the Orthodox, they look very closely at what is happening with us. You see, there is a kind of familiarity for them, for the Orthodox, because they want to stick to tradition. And if the Church is not able to arrange things with its own tradition, the Orthodox will say, well, if you're not able to do it with yourselves, you're not going to do it with us. So, on the contrary, you know, when the Pope greeted or said it's okay to say the old Mass, the Patriarch of Moscow said that's good. So he proved this, so to say, opening to tradition which happens in church. It's interesting to see these things. I don't say that it will go much further, but trying to understand why does the Pope want to do that. So he wants that. Things are blocked. He nominated the prefect of the Congregation of the Faith, who is very clearly opposed to us and strongly opposed to us. And so in order to, how do you say that, to balance the thing, he nominated another person who seems to be more open, who wants to represent the position of the Pope, which makes it a little bit messy. And so when Miller said, no, there's no discussion anymore with the society, the Pope was very angry. And he asked the number two to write a statement in which it is said, no, we have to be patient with the society. We want to continue discussions. And in fact, they know that if my answers are considered as official, then the progressists will make pressure on them and say, well, now you have the answer, so. As they would like, we still hope to get to a solution. They say, no, it's not official. I sent three times my answer. I don't know why it would not be official. But just to relieve the pressure, they say, no, it's not official. I can write it the first time. There's no problem for me. It's really a curious situation, but we have to understand. It does not mean that we have changed anything. No, we maintain our point. The problem is in Rome, not in us. And the problem is that you have the modernists who would like to finish the story of the society with the condemnation. And you have some people who still hope that we'll get to something. I frankly don't know how it would be possible. For me, this situation now is really blocked. Really blocked. And the only way to solve that is to really, well, what I already wrote in 2001, so it's not new, 2001, I wrote to Rome, you make the problem, you want to deal with this problem the wrong way, you have to change the status questionis. So it is, the status questionis is, you explain the problem, say, you deal this problem the wrong way. And why do I say so? How did we get into this thing? How did you come here? Because you were facing a reality which was unbearable, a reality you knew that if you would continue this way, you would hurt your soul, you would sin, you would hurt God. You say, no, I cannot do that. I have to stop there. I jump out of this. All of us, we are in that situation. It's because of facts we are facing, facts which come from the authorities in the church, which are unbearable. That's what I said to the Pope in the year 2005 during the audience. I told him, the situation of the church is such that the traditional life has been made impossible in the church. I told him, every day now, you have priests, you have religious sisters, brothers, you have laymen who come to us, who prefer to be punished, sanctioned, and join us rather than to stay in the situation in which they are, because they have a problem of conscience. They can no longer go that way. I said, if you want something, if you want to get back with us, you have to change that situation. You must bring back tradition in the church. And that's what I repeat today. And what I say, I say to them, you cannot, in the name of the faith, oblige us to deny the reality. You cannot say, because the church cannot say anything wrong, there is nothing wrong in the council. Because the church cannot do anything wrong, the new mass is good. And say, look at the reality. It might be difficult to explain how this is possible, but the reality is there, and it's not lying. The new mass is bad. The new mass is leading the souls in losing the faith into Protestantism. It's clear, it's a fact. I told them, look, this is this liturgy which is making that the priest lose the faith in the real presence. And so many, you know, their answer to me, they did not question the fact that priests have lost the faith, because it's true. I have two figures recent. First, a long time ago, I tried to calculate and said, about 40% of the priests don't believe the real presence. Now, last year, the Vicar General of the Diocese of Trier in Germany said 80% of the priests in the diocese no longer believe in the real presence. And also recently there was an inquiry in the Diocese of Sydney, in the northern part of Sydney, inquiry to the priests. And the priests were able to answer anonymously, so they did not give their name. 78% of the priests don't believe in the real presence. That's the reality. And I say to them that the cause is the new mass. And they answer to me, no. It's because they have been badly trained. But in fact, it's even worse. It means that their seminary was a tragedy. And which mass do they have at the seminary, which badly trained them? The new mass. So you see, what is going to happen in the future now, I don't know. I say, be ready. It can be, we know that, excommunication. Will it really happen or not? I think as long as the Pope is alive, I hardly believe it. say, well, in any case, that's the way they treat us in any case. Now, worry now, they treat us as excommunicated. That's the situation. So it doesn't change anything for us. So I say, don't fear. So you know it. You know what it means. And I think that's not what is moving us. What is moving us is the salvation of the souls. We know that going the way the church goes now, thousands and millions of souls get lost. And that's what we don't want. That's what why we want the church to come back to its tradition. And we know that one day it will happen. How? When? This is really not in our hands. We have to do our job, our duty. The rest is in the hands of God. Will it last long? Will it be short? I have some ideas, but they are pure opinion and perspective. What I see is that those who are really sticking to the council are those who made it and those who implemented. That means the older generation. Those who are in power now. But what I see also is that they are not followed. The younger generation, they don't follow that way. And it's very interesting. I can understand that because they don't have this affective relation. The council for the younger generation is not their baby. The council for them, it's something which happened in the last millennium. So way in the past. What they see, what they experience is a disastrous situation of the church. A ruin. And they're not happy with that. They're frustrated. And so they try to look for something. And when they see, when they hear about tradition, they are very interested. And I see this already now. I can really tell you, we have priests in the modern who really are serious. Really serious. And who want and who question the council. I got several messages of that type. Even more amazing, I saw somewhere a reflection. It was an English pastor who said, that's amazing, but about half of the new seminarians, they have a relation with the old mass. And a French priest, modern, who said to him, well, you know, that's about the same in France. But in France, if you look at the situation now, this year, for example, 10% of the newly ordained French priests are of the society. The society is already representing today, if you look at the new ordination, 10% of all the ordination of France. If you add to this those who are ordained, you could say for Ecclesia Dei and so on, you come to more than one-fourth, 25%. That means that the bishops are losing control on already now a quarter of the church in France. And their figures are dramatic. The average age in France, for the priest, is above 70. More than half of the priests in France are above 75. You can calculate as you want. In 5 years, that will mean that they are above 80, because you have no younger coming. That means we are in front of a collapse of the church in France. It's so serious that the bishop have already prepared a shrinking of the dioceses for 2015 by one-third. One-third of France wiped out of the map. That's the situation. They are sterile. they say you find the same figures with a little bit of difference in time, a bit everywhere. Diocese of Rome. How many ordinations for the Diocese of Rome? Priest from the place. How many in 1 year? One. One only priest in the Diocese of Rome. Take Ireland. They have less than 10 seminarians for the whole Ireland, new seminarians. They have more than that. This is the situation of the church. It's dying. And so, yeah, that's perfectly understandable. The younger generation, they are not happy with that. Of course they're not. And what is interesting, we start to have now bishops. Bishops who think that we are right. They don't open the mouth because it's too dangerous for them. They know that if they open the mouth, they will be decapitated. But you know, it goes so far. One of these bishops directly asked me, he said, I want to say the Mass, Trident Mass every day, but if I do so, I will not be able to stay in my diocese. So what should I do? Stay in my diocese, try to do some good there, or leave my diocese and say the Trident Mass? Well, I answered him, well, do both. That means say the Mass every day and stay in your diocese and try to do the good there. Big fight. Well, anyway. We have now a number of priests, of bishops. It's new. But it's real, it's true. Once again, they may not be courageous enough to speak out. It's true. Because the situation is still very, very difficult. But this is increasing. It's very interesting. They are not the majority, no. But if you compare 5 years ago, it's an enormous progress. I find them a little bit everywhere. When Father Stedin gave a conference in Rome last autumn, 4 bishops asked him to preach the retreat for their priests in their diocese. 7 of these bishops learned to say the Trident Mass. Some from Central America, some from Africa, some from Asia. It's coming little by little. It is coming. It's a big fight. And we are in this fight, and we must not abandon this fight. Of course, we must not burn ourselves. We must be very, very prudent. No doubt about that. But we have to foster this movement, you see. This church is the Catholic Church, is our church. It's sick, full of sickness, yes, so be prudent. But we are not going to abandon the church, no. If someone is sick in your family, you don't say, get lost. It's your father, he's sick, you take care of him. You don't let him say, I don't want to have nothing, anything to do with you, no. The same with the church. It's our church. It's sick. We pray for it. We do what we can. We try not to be burned once again. So we take our precautions. We must. There's no other way. And now when will the time come? This is very difficult to answer. I frankly, personally, I don't think that this is possible until the head is in our favor. Because the fight is too heavy. And the head, that means the Pope, must be absolutely convinced of the necessity of tradition. The fight might continue in the church, but as long as we don't have that, I don't see really any concrete, serious possibility to go ahead because it's too dangerous, too dangerous. We have many enemies, but look, and that's very interesting, who during that time was the most opposed that the church would recognize as society? The enemies of the church, the Jews, the Masons, the Modernists, the most opposed that the society would be recognized as the Catholic, the enemies of the church. Interesting, isn't it? More than that, what was the point? What did they say to Rome? They said, you must oblige these people to accept Vatican II. That's also very interesting, isn't it? People whom from outside the church, who were clearly during centuries enemies of the church, say to Rome, if you want to accept these people, you must oblige them to accept the council. Isn't that interesting? Oh, it is. I think it's fantastic because it shows that Vatican II is their thing, not the church's. They see, the enemies of the church see their benefit in the council. Very interesting. So, I may say that's the kind of argument we're going to use with Rome, trying to make them reflect. I say, the situation is not desperate. No. It's not worse than before. Still the same. There is some hope. I don't think for right for now. But for us, we just continue. This line, which has been so clearly given by Archbishop Lefebvre, which is so clear, this faithfulness to the past is so balanced and right. We see all these fruits. It's undeniable. Let's continue until better times. Now, how long will it last? I don't know. Some pretend that I said that I don't know in 4 years, I don't know how many years there will be an agreement. I have absolutely no idea. The only thing I say is, first, agreement is not the right word, but recognition, normalization. We have a right. We are Catholics, and we have a right to that label. But that does not mean that we are going to change ourselves to get it. No. We know that this tradition is the future of the church. So we must work that it comes back. Do what we can. We see that this influence of the tradition is gaining. Also, this is interesting. We are making our point little by little. The example, look at this year. They tried to celebrate the 50 years of the council. Amazing to see how they feel obliged to justify themselves against our attacks. They didn't do that before. Now they feel obliged to justify. I give you another example, which is a little thing, but it can tell something. You know that just before he became a pope, Benedict XVI gave the communion to a Protestant, to Roger Schütz. It was at the funeral of John Paul II. Cardinal Ratzinger went and gave the communion to Roger Schütz of Pese. Now, he said, a little bit later on, he said to his people who were close to him, what were his thoughts while he was giving the communion? You know what? What was he thinking about when he was giving this communion to this Roger Schütz? He said to them, his close people, I thought, what's the society going to say? So you see, we are in his mind, we his conscience, his bad conscience. It's very interesting to see that, because it shows that, let's say we, so to say, we are out there, we are gaining in influence there. Does not mean that everything is fine. You probably heard these very last days, now they have decided to make Paul the Sixth a blessed, to work for the beatification of Paul the Sixth. That's unbelievable. Well, again, we protest against that. It's, well, the words are failing. So incredible. I give you just two facts. Two facts. One, the tomb of the mother of Paul the Sixth. This is verified. So it's not you say, I did send someone to verify what I tell you now. And we took photos. The tomb of the mother of Paul the Sixth is a Masonic tomb with all the Masonic symbols. It's a fact. How can the Pope allow his mother to have a Masonic tomb? Should help people to reflect. Another one, even more serious. He say even more serious. And the Pius XII, you know that you had the communist Russia was persecuting the Catholics, and suddenly someone said to the Pope, you have a traitor in your house in the Vatican who is dealing with Moscow against you. Pius XII did not want to believe it. But the person who was the Lutheran bishop of Helsinki gave the proof, provided the proof to Pius XII. These proofs were brought to the Pope by, I may say, a secret agent. He was a French military. And when this is all documented, it's not hearsay. And so the Pope got the proof that the traitor was the future Paul the Sixth. And when he knew that, he kicked him out of the Vatican and he made him the Bishop of Milan. And from there, we got Paul the Sixth after John the 23rd. And now they want to make him a blessed. Really, you think that they have lost, I don't know, all of their mind. It's incredible. Incredible. My impression that they try to canonize, to beatify all the popes who have brought in all these novelties. Why? Because they know that they are at the end of their thing. And they want to make like a monument that will stay in the ages by canonizing all these things. Now that's my impression. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my impression once again. Why insisting on making all of them, John 23rd, Paul the Sixth, John Paul the Second, all blessed? Why that? If you start like that, you can make saint everybody. It's really they change the meaning of holiness. John Paul II explained that. He said, I want to make so many saints tomorrow to show that the vocation to holiness is universal. That means everybody is called to be a saint, can be understood correctly. But if you start to make everybody a saint, to canonize everybody, there's something wrong somewhere. Well, just to show you that things are not well, let's say if there is some hope somewhere, it's not, I am not optimistic on the situation. If you want another example, will we finish with this? An image of what kind of time do we have, or are we in? that just come out. It's a little thing there. When you see that, you know spring will come. But if you start to say spring is there, the people will tell you, hey, come on. It's winter. It's freezing. It's snowing. It's icy. It's windy. Don't say it's spring. It's not true. It's winter. And they say both are right. It's still winter. And I say, if we look at the situation of the church, it is still winter. But we start to see these little signs which indicate that spring is coming. And now we have a very, very delicate moment. These buds, at a certain time, they have to come out. If they come out too quickly, they might be frozen. And the new flowers will be demolished. That's why we have to be very, very prudent before having these buds come out. But I may say that's precisely where we are now, in that very delicate time between winter and spring. There is hope for the church, no doubt. But don't be too optimistic either. And we must keep this very prudent balance, trying to make things go forward, at the same time not pushing ourselves in it too far away, burning ourselves or killing ourselves. And so people who fear, I understand them, I say, but we're not going there. No, we're not. We don't want to demolish what we have done during 40 years. That would be crazy. So we want to be, and we are certainly prudent, not trying to throw ourselves in an impossible situation. But we're still in the fight, that's all. And continue to pray, to pray the Blessed Virgin Mary, pray the Rosary. It remains one of our main weapons. And of course, to continue to defend the faith. Not change. We have nothing to change. The faith is above time. What was true is true and will be true. We don't need to change anything there. And well, one day the Lord will put again order in his church. We must not forget that. It's his church. And he remains the boss. Our Lord is the boss. He is in control. This sometimes we forget. There is nothing happening on the earth that would be out of control. Our Lord dared to say there is not one hair which is falling from our head without his permission. Not one air. So there's nothing happening on the earth, nothing evil, which could happen without the permission of God. God is the master. You may wonder, but why does he allow all these things? Well, he knows. He knows better than we why he does that. But what we must remember is that he did put us in that situation. And God, whenever he allows a temptation, a trial to happen, he provides the grace we need to face that situation, to win, to go through it, and not to fail. Remember that. We are in a difficult situation. Yes, it is true. Every day is hard. The world goes down. It's unbelievable what's happening there. Nevertheless, God allows that first. And while allowing that, he gives us what we state. Be faithful to little things. And our Lord promised that He will give us the grace we need to be faithful in the great things. He said it. And of course, go to the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's clear that she has been given to us, especially for this time. She's our Heavenly Mother. There's a little phrase which is impressive in Fatima. God has put in her hands the peace of nations. She's really the queen of heaven and earth. Even the peace of nations is in the hands of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Not to speak about the peace, the spiritual peace, the peace with God, the fight against the sin. And so really stay close to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Then this time I promise I finish. We will consecrate, we want to consecrate our society to Saint Joseph. Why? Because Saint Joseph is the patron of the church. He's the protector of the church. And remember in Fatima, that's also something very interesting. On the 13th of October, the Blessed Virgin Mary announced the miracle of the Son, and she said that she would come to bless the earth with her Son and with Saint Joseph. Saint Joseph was there with the child Jesus blessing the earth when he had the miracle of the Son. So you have the Blessed Virgin Mary, you have the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Yes, that's the first part of the essential of the message of Fatima. But you also have Saint Joseph. And so as he's the patron, the protector of the church, and as this time is so hard, we want to consecrate the society and, of course, all of you, all of us, to Saint Joseph. So this consecration will happen on the 19th of March, which is the Feast of Saint Joseph. So I invite all of you to prepare that date, to prepare that consecration. We will, of course, provide with the necessary document for that great, great event. And so, well, in conclusion, the fight continues. I may say nothing new. Just the fight continues as ever before. And so let's finish by entrusting ourselves to the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I will give you the blessing. Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita in nomine Domini, benedictio Dei omnipotentis, ad Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et Maria semper. Amen.